Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, great to be with you.
And on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello. And listeners, we heard that our producers' parents are tuning in and they have a favorite.
And it's not Shireen and I.
I'm excited to say it's Natalie. Congratulations, Natalie.
Yeah, thank you.
It is so fun to have little feedback from listeners. I know that we've run into folks out in the public. We get emails from y'all. We definitely talk about them. We don't always get them on air. But I just want to say to the listeners, thank you so much for sticking with us. And we really appreciate when you send along your feedback.
Mm-hmm. Conversations are important.
Yeah.
Right. And we're having a three-way conversation, but we hope that the listeners feel somehow a part of it by listening to us each week.
That's right.
So, hey, we're going to go philosophical this time, John and Shireen. I want to talk about realignment of political parties and just sort of think through for a minute what we're witnessing. So, you know, we're different ages. We come from different parts of the country. We have different ideologies. But all of us can agree that we're at a tipping point for political parties. There's something pretty radical happening.
Well, there's do they matter or not? And then there's who do they represent?
Yeah. So
what is their agenda?
So let's just break it down a little bit. John, put in words what you see happening in the Republican Party, and then I'll ask Shireen to do the same.
So what I see right now is basically kind of a tug of war between, if you will, the Reagan philosophy, mm-hmm. which has guided the Republican Party for decades, and the Trump MAGA movement and what that means. And it's a much more populist movement. I would say there's a lot of disenfranchised Democrats that are sweeping into the Republican Party as a result of that, feeling like they were left out or disenfranchised in the Democratic Party, and they're searching for a home, and they feel like Donald Trump speaks to them. And so that's creating a lot of turmoil in the Republican Party. You've got folks that are saying, well, you're a rhino, Republican mm-hmm. in name only, mm-hmm. yet you've been a Republican for decades, a staunch conservative, you know, Republican, Reagan Republican, and yet right now, the party doesn't represent that. The party is shifting in a different direction.
Shireen, stay with Republican first and just describe what you're seeing.
Oh, okay.
What are you seeing?
I mean,
he
does a
party.
Tug of war, and he represents the Reagan as one side and MAGA as the other. Another way to think of the Reagan is the establishment Republicans.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what I see is a party that has had a hostile takeover from a very undisciplined and in some ways unpredictable person who is more interested in the maybe celebrity of an office than in governing mm-hmm. with any ideology or goal to improve the lives of the American people. The recent reporting, the 100-day interviews that Donald Trump has been giving are deeply insightful mm-hmm. when it comes to understanding how unbelievably undisciplined and unserious he is about fixing the actual problems that Americans face day to day.
Yeah.
And I think what's happened in many respects is that there has been a cult of personality bigger than we really could have ever imagined. I think a lot of people felt that way about Obama, right? That it was like a cult of personality. But we're in it with Trump in a way that feels decentering. It feels, again, just undisciplined and chaos creating.
Yeah. Okay. And so when you reference...
So you're not signing up soon.
It's not my day to join the Republican Party.
When you reference interviews he's given, President Trump has given an interview with Time Magazine and with The Atlantic that are both in depth. So that's our readers can go look there. John and Shireen, I would say he is the most consequential political figure of the 21st century. At this point, he's earned that title.
Because?
Because he's been elected twice and he's leading a movement that is radically reshaping the grand old party. And that reshaping is, you know, we started hearing it, you know, a few years ago, but it's his party now.
Yeah.
It's been reshaped, right? And basically, Republicans that are of the establishment type, they're nowhere to be seen at this point. You know, you heard a little bit of Dick Cheney, but not much. George W. Bush has been completely quiet, right?
Yeah.
Our former governor, Mike Leavitt, who had two cabinet seats, you know, you don't hear a lot from him entering the fray here, even though he was part of, an administration that was fairly recent. And so, yeah, this is a radical reshaping.
Yeah.
Now,
and I'm
Yeah.
And I'm going to caution that slightly. I think he is leading that movement. The question will be, is it just about him and his personality, or will it have longevity after he's gone?
Yeah.
I mean, Reagan clearly had longevity long after he was dead.
Yeah, what I'm saying is he's got longevity, and he was the, you know, the kingman that made it happen, and that his skill set and his talents were perfectly timed when he came down that escalator, and given his perspectives about, you know, personalities and branding and his communication skills about how he doesn't tell the truth and then he makes fake truth.
Yes. And the grift, the self-enrichment is like another component of this where I just, it is stunning to me that Republicans who claim to be law and order, by the book, follow the rules, watching this president enrich himself through cryptocurrency, through a private club he's opening in Washington, D.C., the amount of self-dealing here, all the way to deals that have been made across the globe with his family, are stunning.
Okay, so John, we're being really tough on the MAGA movement, but let's just take a second also and time out and say—
And there's a reason for the MAGA movement.
Well, that's where I'm going next. Because, Shereen, we're going to get to— but if you just think about it, there's been so much overreach for so long. Is there reason to have a different trade balance? Potentially. I mean, the tariffs from other countries are higher than what we charge them. That doesn't feel right to me. So there's some overreach there. You know,
there's job loss and shifting of you know, where things are being manufactured, and efficiency in terms of the automation that we're doing. So jobs are being lost. So folks are feeling like,
what's in it for me?
I mean,
how do I buy a home?
They feel like the system's stacked and rigged against them.
We can go to international policy and being the world's policeman. We can have strong feelings about that. You guys both agree on that one.
I think we can go back to our classrooms where we'll also have another point of agreement and lots of data that we've had for years. But I think now we're having a really serious conversation about what is happening to boys in our education system.
Yeah. So would it be fair to say, rather than point at the MAGA movement, if you disagree with some of the things about the current president, why don't we point to the problems in society that it's trying to fix? Just a thought.
Well, and this is why I've contended that Trump and Sanders, Bernie, are different sides of the same coin.
Mm.
They're the mad as hell caucus.
Yeah.
And they're speaking to this crowd, different directions of where they want to go, but they're tying in and tapping into this discontent in society.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that I sometimes can agree with that. Mm-hmm. I would say the flaw in that argument is that there is an ideological and policy driven approach that Sanders takes, right? One that says we should be investing at large scale on affordable housing, on healthcare for all, on college, you know, really preparing people for the kind of economic environment that they're going into. And on the other side, the Trump ideology is self-enrichment. I mean, there's not a policy, I guess.
I'm just saying they're tapping into the similar discontent.
They're tapping into similar discontent, but the undergirding of that is an actual policy proposal solution to some of these issues, and simply not that in any coherent way on the right.
You guys could see me grabbing my phone. I was trying to think through this book, but there's a book that I became familiar with when I worked in Washington. It's called The History of Mass Movements. I was trying to remember the author. I think it's Eric Hoffer. It's an old book, probably written in the 50s. But it basically writes about, you know, what creates mass movements. And to your point, John, it makes the point that the extremes have more in common with each other than they do with the person on the ideological spectrum next to them. And it's because mass movements are more about personality types than they are about ideology. And so that a Bernie Sanders and a Donald Trump have personality types that are similar and they lead mass movements rather than being similar to people that are like in the middle, like me.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that.
Okay, Shereen, coming your way.
Okay.
The Democrats.
Okay.
They also have some interesting things happening in their party. Let's take a couple of minutes before we break and just talk about the D's.
Yeah. So I would say there are a couple of main strains, right? One would be more of a traditional neoliberalism, mm-hmm. An approach that is probably more familiar when we're thinking about the way that politics have worked for Democrats for a long time. And then a much more progressive movement led in part by Bernie Sanders. But I do think that there's also a big generational gap. And for a lot of young Democrats or people who find themselves on the more progressive end of the political spectrum, and I think this is also a place where Democrats get into trouble, is that so many of our issues are wildly popular. The party itself is not. And I think a big part of that is that we haven't made swift moves to create space for young leadership in time to meet with how the public is perceiving us. When we think about the skill that Nancy Pelosi brought to the, you know, role that she had for as many years as she had it, she got a lot done. But do I think that that was a place where people tapped into Democratic leadership? I certainly don't. I would say the same about Chuck Schumer, right? So we have this sort of disconnect between some of our leaders and the people who are making policy move forward and the sentiment and kind of the broader sense of wanting a new generation of leaders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, John, you see that any differently? Because, I mean, the way I see it is, yeah, Shireen's got a really good point when she says the Democrats are have more popular proposals than they are popular as a party.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also representing a party that is, you know, kind of at war internally, a little bit of a civil war going on between those who just want to have good, strong government and those that are more into the socialist camp.
Well, whether they're having a civil war or not, to a certain extent, they had a shellacking at the last election and they're trying to figure out who they are. This was not the outcome they anticipated in on so many fronts. And so right now, I mean, you've got the Gavin Newsom saying, hey, you know, our party's become toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that, from my perspective, is as I was growing up, the Democrats touted themselves as blue collar working class. Mm-hmm. That's who we represent. And then I would articulate, they seem to have shifted more to, you know, what you would call the wine and cheese Democrats,
mm-hmm.
looking down their nose at the working class.
Cadillac men, liberals.
Cadillac liberals, I guess you might call it. And so you saw this, and then you saw something which was, rather than trying to look out for people, if you didn't say the right things or act the right way or support the right causes, you were not part of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a lot of folks, they just felt like they were ostracized.
Yeah.
And so you're seeing what I would say is a new vein in the Democratic Party, this vein of abundance. You know, we've regulated too much. We've ostracized people too much. We need to focus on growing the pie and abundance will solve it. And to me, that's kind of like taking part of the playbook historically of the Reagan Republicans mm-hmm. and throwing it over there.
Yeah. Let's take a short break and we'll come right back talking about political parties on both sides of the aisle. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We're talking about the realignment of political parties and where our country's heading politically. And wow, it's an interesting conversation. You two have both set it up that both the Republicans and Democrats have internal conflict and a lot kind of going on. And I guess what I would want to add to it is the middle seems to be missing. There's like, where is the middle? As you...
Who is the middle? Define the middle from your perspective.
Well, you know, John, we talked about sort of establishment Republicans. I don't, you know, I like to just think I'm an independent that, you know, makes decisions based on what I think's right. But I'm very committed to free enterprise. I'm very committed to limited government. I actually like a strong defense. I believe in a lot of investment and productivity. I believe in the importance of human capital. I mean, I'm always interested in developing people. So where does that put me ideologically? Well, the conservative principles have matched really well with my identity. And that's why I've been a registered Republican for as long as I've been an adult. I've worked only for Republicans. I worked for Dan Marriott back in Congress. When I say I worked, I was an intern. But that was my first exposure, you know, to sort of professional life. I worked with Governor Bangeter, with Governor Leavitt, with Governor Walker.
Some of those people would probably be considered Democrats now.
At least they're, you can see they're all moderates. And when I look at the cast of governors, I love our governors. I mean, I think Bangeter and Leavitt and Walker and Huntsman and Herbert and Cox, they're all pretty much in the political moderate space. I really am, you know, have a high trust level with all of them and the decisions they make. So that's where I am politically.
Yeah.
But I do see.
And you're feeling kind of lost and left out. I would describe myself as extremely conservative, and yet I don't align with the MAGA movement, which creates an interesting dynamic from my perspective.
Sure.
It's interesting because you hate to bring faith into political discussions, right? Because anytime you pick God as your advocate, you're like cutting out someone else, right?
Yeah.
Who has a different God or a different way of thinking about
Abraham
it.
Abraham Lincoln, what do you say?
Yeah,
I'm not worried if God's on my side. I need to worry if I'm on God's side.
Yeah, yeah. And but anyway, I am a person of faith, and I use that my faith to guide me. And my faith puts me, Shireen, in a situation where sometimes I see things on the left that are consistent with my worldview and my values. And sometimes I see things on the right. And that's where I'm constantly, you know, gravitating. I tend to be economically conservative and a little bit more socially liberal. And, you know, that comes from my faith tradition. But
can I give a shout out to moderates? Because I think we don't have time to really do a deep dive into what happened with this last election and Democrats. And I know you said it was a shellacking, but this is a president. Trump did not cross 50%, right? This is one of the closest. The margin by which he won was less than Hillary Clinton. You know, I mean, like there are lots of reasons to suggest that it wasn't a shellacking. And I do think that there is a fundamental challenge that we face when we have districts that have been on the right and left gerrymandered to make very few actually contestable districts left in this country. Right. So there's a backdrop of gerrymandering that I think is important. There's a kind of broader context of elections are kind of getting closer and closer, and they have been for many cycles here. But what I would just say is that it seemed like to me we were at a transitional moment. We didn't make that transition. I do believe that Joe Biden said that he was going to do one term, and then he decided he wasn't going to do that. Mm-hmm. And then by the time Kamala Harris stepped in, it was too late. I think it was too late. And the decision that was made in that election to me from where I sat was to go after moderates, to mm-hmm. say, okay, we are those, you know, we mm-hmm. are fiscally responsible, which honestly, I think that is a characteristic the Democrats bring to the table. And we are socially liberal, and there is room for you in this party. And it did not work.
Mm-hmm.
So where are moderates going to show up? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, where do
yeah.
they show up
yeah.
in the electorate, and
so
how do they move?
A question a lot of people are asking is what comes next?
Yeah.
And a way to think of that is we are in the MAGA Trump world right now with the House, the Senate, and the White House, all of the same political party, and that reaching out into the states in a very significant way. Not all of them, but a lot of power being played. The question is, if that ideology, that movement is short-lived or doesn't work long-term, where does the opposition come from? Where does the prevailing party come from? Is it the Democrats that shape and change and become more popular, or do the Republicans reinvent themselves? Or does something come from the outside, third party? We're all like looking up in the sky on that. I know that's a big question, but we had that this past weekend
usually it's really hard to reinvent yourself in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So really the change usually comes, from my perspective, from the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
So you lose an election, and then you have to rethink who you are and where you're going.
Okay. Well, so program this. We right now have an economy that looks 60% chance it's headed towards recession, midterm elections.
Which does not bode well in a midterm election.
Yeah. Midterm elections will start in about 6 months in terms of, you know, vying for it and whatnot. So if the Trump administration has bad midterm elections, what happens, John?
House flips. All of a sudden, you know, it's impeachment here and impeachment there, and
yeah, so
impeachment
2 years
everywhere.
Thrown away, yeah.
2 years thrown away, and a president who is unable to execute on his agenda, whatever that agenda might be, and then the Republicans having to think to themselves, okay, is continuing the MAGA movement a winning strategy, or do we need to rethink that because we just
Good
lost
point.
This last election?
And then
yeah.
Shireen, on your side, if the elections go that way, the D's have to put forward something more popular than what they have today or what they put in the last election. What do they do?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think this is where it becomes, in some ways, I think a lot of politics is performative. But if you only have control of the House, I mean, no one's listening to me, but going down the road of more of these investigations is not going to work. Mm-hmm. People want to see Democrats coming up to bat mm-hmm. and delivering on issues that actually matter to them, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I think an example that comes to mind right now is the dismantling of the CFPB. I can't believe we named it that, but we did. So the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which was working well to protect consumers in this country, to make sure that their banks couldn't, you know, charge enormous overdraft fees so that they could have greater transparency in lending. All of these ways in which Americans' pocketbooks were impacted positively by a idea that came out of Democrats. It's been dismantled. It's being dismantled by Republicans now. But instead of coming back and saying, okay, we're going to address that medical debt shouldn't show up on credit reports, something like that, what we'll see is are these investigations that mean very little to the American people, but are very performative in the political space. So I think we have to deliver, but it will be impossible to deliver with the Trump administration.
Shereen, take me to personalities. I mean, Governor Pritzker gave an amazing speech this week. You know, past week, he's making some plays. He did it in New Hampshire.
Yep.
He said, "If I sound like I'm full of contempt, I am."
I am.
He encouraged people to get out on the streets and speak their mind.
Yeah.
And you know, he was pretty aggressive there. But so, give me some personalities of who becomes the embodiment of the new Democratic Party.
Yeah. So I think there are a few people. If you're paying attention to Pete Buttigieg, he's clearly still making moves. And what he is talking about are those fundamental ways that we actually advance policy, advance legislation, work in communities, work at the state level, and try to improve people's lives.
Super talented guy.
Super talented guy. Yeah. Excellent communicator. I continue to be a fan of Big Gretch. Gretchen Whitmer is, I think, a very talented leader. You know, really came back to and focused on fixing the damn roads in Michigan. And people reelected her to fix the damn roads, right? And that is the kind of basic kitchen table issue that actually matters to people. And we want to see movement on that. But what we also want to see.
Governor Beshear?
Oh, yeah. Andy Beshear. Great example. Kentucky. You know, but here's an interesting example of him, right?
You notice I'm not going to AC and Bernie. I'm trying to get to these candidates.
These are people who have continued to stand up and hold, for example, to say that we are not going to sell out our trans loved ones in the name of, you know, make political ideology. We are going to stand for human rights. Mm-hmm. We are going to stand for people's access to health care.
Yeah.
We're going to stand for people's freedoms, and we're going to do it while we're fixing the roads and making housing more affordable.
Okay, John, give me personalities or, you know, seeds of what could happen in the Republican Party if this doesn't go well for the Trump administration over the next year and a half.
If it doesn't go well, I mean, this is the challenge, because they're still going to control the Senate and clearly the White House. So they will think it's still largely going okay. And they can try and pick off one or two Democrats
or
whatever.
The fall in public opinion approval has to shift.
Right, right.
So that could happen. What I'm saying is, if it doesn't shift, who emerges?
I think J.D. Vance still emerges. He's still going to be, I think, wants to be seen as the heir apparent to the MAGA movement.
Wants to be seen and appears are different things. But
okay.
Go ahead.
But you know, then you're going to look at where do the Marco Rubios of the world shake out. I mean, clearly, if he's working for the president, he's going to stay in line. But there's going to be a point at which he's going to make a play to say, I'm the leader of the party going forward. And then when you look around at different governors, I'm not sure who's going to really start stepping up, you know, whether, you know, the governor down in Texas.
Virginia. Virginia's one.
Virginia,
I think of.
Yeah. Glenn Youngkin.
Yep.
Except
Youngkin.
He's leaving office next year. I mean, he can serve one term and that's it.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes hard to be out of the light and still make
lots
a play for
come.
That. So
yeah,
we'll
lots
have to
come.
See
who
what
do you want
to
see,
out.
Natalie?
Oh, of course, Nikki Haley. You know, I'd love to see Nikki Haley.
Do you think Nikki has a shot, or do you think her time has passed?
I just still think that's to be determined.
Yeah.
Still be determined. Okay, I got to ask you this question. Where's Utah in 4 years, John? Let's wrap it up by just giving pictures of where's Utah in 4 years. Got all these national dynamics. We're a state that can be kind of countercultural, definitely quite red. But I've made the comment that Utah could be purple within 10 years, in part because it's a bit countercultural to the MAGA movement.
I think it depends. I think one of the things that factors in is the upcoming party chair race in the Republican Party.
Oh, this will be something to watch. That's a key for our listeners.
I think it will go from either growing it to make it stronger.
So this is Phil Lyman.
Well, or Rob Axton. Rob Axton growing it to be a stronger party. I think Phil will throw it into disarray and will utter, you know, likely has a good chance of working to kill the party. Given the antics that I've seen over the last year.
Yeah. Okay.
I think the biggest factor here and how quickly Utah changes has to do with whether or not we see new districts out of the gerrymandering case.
Yeah. tell us just a little bit more.
I think if you've got a fair shot at districts that are drawn where the voters get to pick their leaders and not the leaders picking their voters, that we have a very different we have different opportunities to see greater balance. And I think when Utahns see greater balance, what they will see is a party that is very serious about solving problems and coming to the table proactively. And I think that that will be good for Democrats in the state.
And I think the great promise for Utah over the next 4 years and in some of the things that you're describing is that women and young Utahns show up and engage and become part of creating a prosperous future for this state.
Yeah.
It is time. That would mean to me, I don't know that it'll be in the 4 years, but we need to get our first woman governor. We've got to get more women elected to the legislature, and we got to get more young people involved in
politics.
And it
would be nice if they passed pro-women policies.
One of the other questions will be, how do we engage politically?
Yeah.
Do we build bridges or do we engage in warfare?
I'm all for dignity and I'm with you. Okay, great program. Thanks everybody for, you know, tuning in with me on a more philosophical discussion. Shireen Gorbani, John Dougal, and Natalie Gochner. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.